You're at your old trusty boat. You call Mighty Sparrow. I'm in the city of Mardi Gras.
Welcome to the Sailing Into Oblivion podcast, where we sit down with everyday people who do extraordinary things. I'm your host, Jerome Rand.
Good evening, everybody. Wow. I don't even really know where to start. So I'm just going to start with where I am, and that is aboard a lovely vessel, a motor yacht, not a sailboat, but lovely all the same, here sitting on the main dock at Bitter End Yacht Club. And I couldn't be happier, I don't think. I don't think it would be humanly possible to actually feel any more elated, if that's the right word, than what I'm feeling right now. And it's not so much, although it adds to it, the fact that I am here in the BVI, finally returned to the Bitter End Yacht Club to do some presentations, to do some clinics, probably a few beer can regattas. Now, the feeling is has really come from this past week where I finally got the opportunity to do what I've been wanting to attempt, but scared of, and I was so nervous. Essentially, flew to the Bahamas, did a big corporate gig, flew to Grand Cayman, another corporate gig, and basically it was my opportunity, my chance, my one shot at doing this. And, you know, if I would have screwed it up, chances are I probably could have found another. I would have wiggled in somewhere else, but you know, yeah. The last 2 months have literally been building towards this, and the amount of work that went into preparation and planning, and the amount of people that helped me, either just by mentoring me or by creating the opportunity in the first place. And, you know, I guess you could go way back and all the people that have helped along the way, literally years. It went better than I could have ever expected. That's all I can say. It was awesome. I'm not saying that I did the greatest thing in the world and I'm, you know, the best or whatever. No, it's just the whole thing, the talks, the presentations, very well received, really hit home. Brought not just a story, but a lot of lessons in how to deal with situations, how to sail off into the unknown, how to face the unknown, the uncertainty that lies just on the horizon for everybody in so many different aspects. This world is crazy, it's changing, and a lot's coming down the pipeline. And finally, through, again, a lot of mentoring, was able to tie all that in to my sailing trips and things like that. So I don't know. I'm over the moon. I just ordered and have eaten a few slices of a pizza that I literally have dreamt about ever since I've left this place. There is a pizza chef here. His name is Ramon. And if you see Ramon making some dough, well, get a pizza because it's freaking amazing. He literally saved me when I worked here all those years. There were so many times I'm running around. I had to skip dinner. I'm finding guests. I'm doing this. It's late. And I'd run up to that bar and Ramon would look at me. And I'd look at him, and he wouldn't even, he'd just nod, just the quickest little nod, and I knew, boom, order was in. I could come back, 10 minutes, it was going to be done. Oh, this one's to you, Ramon. Ramon! I'm seeing so many old faces, it's just so crazy. And I don't want to go too far off, because I think I need to do like a whole podcast of what it feels like to come back to this sort of job. But, or not job, but come back to a place that you were, it was such a huge part of my life, and see all these people and all this sort of stuff. So that being said, tonight's podcast, I got to sit down with Dr. Gonzo, very good friend of mine who I sort of ushered, or I don't say ushered, but pointed the right direction and made the good connection so that he could get a job down here. And Dr. Gonzo was essentially worked up in Michigan, and I've known him since he's a wee lad. And yeah, it's been pretty cool. He's 28 years old now, and you know, it's not one of those things where he was looking to escape his life, but I think just broaden. That's probably a good way to put it. And although he has a massive, massive skill set when it comes to computers, data, crunching, all that sort of stuff, you know, sometimes taking a little breather and having a job that you absolutely love is essential in this life. You never want to look back and be like, oh, man, I wish I woulda. Because guess what? We're all going to do that to some degree, I'm sure. But, you know, if you don't really have to. So, in any event, he's been down here for a few months, and I wanted to get his take on, you know, coming down to the bitter end, seeing what it was like, and kind of his experience. And then we talk about camping, and we talk, you know, we go off. We're old friends, so we just go off into the weeds. But I think it's kind of a neat conversation because it's two old friends who haven't seen each other in many, many months and shared experiences, all that sort of stuff. So before we get into that, obviously I'm going to be down here at the bitter end starting presentations tomorrow. I'm going to do a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday I think we do sea stories around the campfire. Those are all going to be from 5 till 6 p.m. And then we've also have clinics from 10 to 11 each morning from Monday through Thursday, I believe. You know what? You know what? Just for the sake of it, I'm going to look at the schedule. That might be a good idea. Okay. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we have clinics. Oh, must have gear. That one's on a different time. Yeah, 10 to 11. Thursday, it's 1 to 2. Seaside Stories, 8 p.m. to 10. Friday, On the Water, Beer Can Regatta hosted by yours truly. Oh, they're going to be cold that day, guaranteed. Saturday, we're off. And Sunday, Fireside Seaside Stories, 8 p.m. to 10. That's just going to be good. I mean, and these aren't just my stories. I mean, I'll chime in now and again. I want to hear your stories. So if you're in the BVI, or if you're coming to the BVI this week and next week, come on up. Let's hang out. Let's chat. I'd love to hear some stories and yeah, just meet some more sailors and everything. And hey, who knows? I'll do a pod with you. I'm all about it. Hey, anybody. I'm going to grab as many people as I possibly can. Fingers crossed that I can get the snorkel king of the Caribbean, the one, the only, Captain Kinto, on board for a podcast. I don't know. He's pretty shy. As brooding and gigantic of a man as he is, you know, he's a shy guy. What can I say? Other than that, if you want to support the podcast, follow the links in the description. We've got Patreon, we've got Venmo, PayPal, all that sort of stuff. I'm going to throw the links in for the merch line, for the book, and then probably sailingintooblivion.com. Go to that website. Follow the podcast button and hit click on the show, and those go directly to me. It's been a really busy couple of weeks, but I definitely still love hearing the emails. If you got suggestions for shows, hit me up. I'm all ears. Hopefully going to get a few of these out. We're probably going to do more than one a week because I'm just going to keep pumping them out. And thanks for listening. And here is my conversation with Dr. Gonzo, a.k.a. Jeff. Today we have the doctor, Dr. Gonzo, all the way. We're sitting in his room in the BVI at the bitter end. The time is now. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to finally be on here, man. It's been a while.
I know. Well, and you know, our histories go back so far with, you know, being up in Michigan. You were knee high back when I first met you.
You're the reason I still sail, dude.
I'm like aging myself a little here. it's pretty incredible to sort of follow along and see how you're going. And now the fact that you're at bitter end, dude, is just, and that's one of the big things I want to pick your brain on, because I know what it was like for me when I got here. But it's interesting always to see how people's experiences are, because you moved to a different country.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, whoa.
And not only is it a different country, it's a tiny island.
Like, yeah.
Like, this island's about the size of my high school, like, growing up.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah. So it's what? Just under 3,000 people here?
On VG. Yeah. I mean, last time I was here, I think they had quite a few people take off after Irma and not everybody's returned because it's still not like full force. But yeah, I mean, the Bitter End used to be, I think, one of the top five employers in the BVI.
Mm-hmm.
I think Little Dicks is still the biggest. A couple hundred people work there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, outside the government, I suppose. But but yeah. In rolls Dr. Gonzo, and what was your like first impression when you rolled up?
So the first, like, it was actually, so I got here, flew in, Nick Putman, your old staff.
We'll get him on the show.
Picked me up, and we just went straight to the Bond. That was my first introduction to the BVI lifestyle, was going to Gunny's. Yeah. Gunny's Cool Corner. Another shout out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you know, you know.
And we spent some time there, and then... so I arrived at night. It was pitch black when I showed up. So okay. I didn't see anything of the island pretty much. And I'm just kind of driving up these mountain roads. It's, you know, not the greatest roads in the world.
No,
plenty of potholes.
It's a little sketchy.
Yeah. So like I didn't like my kind of visual was just dark. Like I couldn't see anything. And then I actually spent the night at Nick's house that night, which he lives in, the North Sound, which kind of overlooks, you know, the North Sound, obviously.
Yeah, he's in. So he's, is he still in Gun Creek?
No. He's up a little bit higher, closer to the Bond.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So he's up the hill. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wake up in the morning, I go look outside, and that's kind of my first daylight view of out here. And it's absolutely gorgeous.
I know, right?
It was, you know, waking up on the top of the hill, overlooking the entire North Sound. You could see Sabah, Prickly Pear, Necker, Eustacia. I was like, Jesus Christ, this is awesome. Like,
next level. It is a $1 billion view for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, we drive down and then you have to hop on a ferry to get over to the actual Bitter End.
And there's something cool about that.
Yeah.
You're sort of like, oh, we got to do water. It's just not like, there's no commute.
Yeah.
No normal commute.
It's not a normal commute. So then, you know, we get on property and it's just awesome. Very welcoming. Everybody kind of like the staff all around, you know, everyone said hi immediately to the fresh face. Which I felt awesome. You know, I was lucky enough before I moved down here. I had a pretty big community between Nick, who I knew back home, a friend Dobbs of mine that also lives down here. So, like, I kind of had some friends moving into this. It wasn't like...
You weren't just straight up.
Yeah.
Like, when I got down here back in 07, I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
So I was like, holy cow, here we go.
Yeah.
But
exactly. But I mean, like, all the local staff, like, very welcoming when I first got here, which is absolutely awesome. And then the property as a whole is just beautiful.
Dude, it is brand spanking new.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. The restaurant's well done. It has this, like, rustic feel to it, but it's, you know, new construction, but still feels kind of like it's been there for a while.
And it feels like the Bitter End still. I was a little bit kind of, I didn't know what to expect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It definitely feels like the Bitter
That's
End.
That's good.
Which
that
is huge.
That is good. Good. Sadly, you know, there is a bunch of construction going on the property right now. So that kind of limits, you know, your kind of like initial view of it, of just seeing like heavy machinery everywhere.
Yeah. That's a decent fence though.
Yeah.
They built. That's kind of not super intrusive. You know, maybe throw a couple palm trees in front of it or something.
Yeah. You know, hide it a little bit better. Yeah, but, you know it's still kind of like, it took away from the initial aspect of it, but once you kind of get around that, it's like, it's just a beautiful property.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Right. I would have loved to have seen it back in the day, like, you know, in the 60s when it was just, there was just nothing up here. And there were, I think, five or six little teeny huts and one little hut with like a dining room or something in it. And this guy Basil owned it. And that was when Richard's father, Myron, came in and wanted to just buy one, and Basil was like, tell you what, you can buy them all because there's too many people coming up here now and I need to go find my peace and quiet. And so boom, there it was.
Dang. I don't know, that's how it started.
I believe so. I've been told that story about a million times and I tend to believe it at this point. But yeah, I mean, could you imagine seeing this whole place where it was just not developed at all? Like, there's literally nothing.
No, that would be
unbelievable. Dude,
just absolutely beautiful.
But it's a lot of fun now with all the eye candy, all the yachts and the helicopter. I mean, it's pretty crazy. How was Christmas?
Christmas was, it was awesome.
Off the chain.
That was awesome. There was just yachts, galore in the sound. I mean, one of the nights we just went out for like a, it was like 7 p.m., pitch black already here.
Yeah.
We're just cruising around admiring all the beautiful yachts out in the sound. Yeah, it was gorgeous. It's just kind of like, wow, like I'm out here mingling with all these, you know, wealthy people and their millions of dollars of yachts, and I'm just in this tiny little whaler.
Yeah, right there, though. You're like 10 feet off.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, what are they watching?
Yeah. But no, Christmas was awesome. We were really busy down here. We were slammed, teaching a bunch of lessons, doing a bunch of beer can regattas, a bunch of sailing out of bounds, which was
out of bounds fun.
Scary the first time for me.
Yeah.
Really scary.
Do you go out through the reef and everything?
Yeah, go out through the reef.
Nice.
Around Necker Island, which, you know, that was my first time in like a small boat in the open ocean.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I think that day, it was probably waves like 6 feet.
Yeah.
And those felt like 30-foot waves, you know.
It's intimidating when you're only about a foot above the water. You look back at a 6-footer, and you're like, geez.
Yeah,
please.
Exactly.
What is this pipeline out here?
But after that first time, it was fine, you know. I was like, okay, this is normal life down here.
It becomes your backyard, like Eustacia Sound. North Sound obviously is all deep water, except for what? Over by the channel and Calcahoon Reef by Mosquito and all that. But Eustacia Sound, you've got your little troublesome areas for sure. But
absolutely,
you get to know them really, really well. You'd be able to find them at night and stuff without actually like bumping them with your rudder and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll find out how good you are. What is it? The 24th is the full moon?
24th is the full moon. Yeah.
Bingo. It's going to be a big one too, I have a feeling.
I hope so. I got lucky on my first full moon sale. I had a local boat captain, Captain Brett, not going to say his last name here. He was on my boat with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he was able to completely in the pitch black, just guide me straight through the reef.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was perfect.
There you go. Now, do you guys still go sand spit?
Yeah. We stopped off at Sandy Spit, got some photos. We had some cheers of tequila and then kept sailing on to Prickly Peril. We had a pretty big bonfire on the backside,
which is nice.
Yeah,
I know. It's so good. It's so good. Like we were going to, for my little thing down here, we were going to do stargazing cruises as well.
Ooh.
But then I went and the first time I looked at whatever the phases of the moon were, I think I looked at the wrong year because it was saying, oh, it'd be perfect for it. It was going to be a new moon. And then I rechecked it before we confirmed the schedule. And I was like, oh, full moon. And part of me was like, I want to do those cruises. But at the same time, I was like, that means we're doing a full moon sale. It's going to be epic. I can't wait. Dude. I mean, we used to night sail all the time down here. It didn't matter moon or not. We'd go windsurfing at night, too. But
Was the mooring fields as big as they were when you were down here?
Oh, we always night sail up in Eustacia. Oh,
okay.
Always. You just go right up there. We've done a couple where it was so windy, we just went to Sandbox and chilled out down there for a little bit. But, yeah, the mooring field, you hit those buoys and stuff, and it's not good. You can damage the Hobie Cat pretty quick by wailing into one of those suckers. And I remember one night I was anchored on Mighty Sparrow over by Prickly Pear, and a powerboat came running through, and all of a sudden it was like, wham! And I'm kind of looking out, and the boat slowed down, but then it sped back up and took off, but it hit one of these El Cheapo green channel markers
filled
with foam.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden I started seeing just foam particles everywhere.
God.
And the dude had just hit this thing, blasted it full blast, and, you know, completely destroyed it. I don't know what happened to his boat, but he didn't sink. Oh, but I did see that picture.
Yeah.
So that double-masted sailboat's up there on the reef.
That happened today? I think so, because I was going to go.
It looked high and dry.
Yeah, I was going to do some winging or meet up with some friends that were kite surfing after work today, and they were like, nope, we got to deal with this boat on the reef.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it looked bad.
Yeah,
and it's
that
low
picture
tide
looked really
at
good.
At like 7, so it's even going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably gonna. Well, I mean, luckily there's not a huge swell up there, I don't think.
Yeah, no, it's low today on the swell.
Yeah, so that will help. But yeah, I don't doubt Husky Salvage is gonna have to. Your mayday is our payday. they've come up and we've helped them get so many boats off that reef. That's just south of the Oil Nut Bay Channel, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah, and that's, dude, I don't know why they even put channel markers in that. It was so dumb because that's such a sketchy spot for a big boat to come through.
Well, I
don't know. We've pulled boats off of that exact spot many times.
Well, the other day I was kind of snorkeling over by that channel, and it was low tide, and a monohull came through, and they were just dodging the coral heads, like even in the channel. Uh-huh. I'm like, that's crazy.
No,
why would you do that?
It's nuts. No, I don't understand why they marked it. If they didn't mark it, people wouldn't go through it. It's actually kind of funny. When I did the trip around the world and did my flyby through the North Sound, I came around Pedraro's Point, and it was still dark. It was like 4 a.m,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to go in between Necker Island and Eustacia Island,
mm-hmm.
and I've done that 80 million times on a Hobie Cat mm-hmm. or plenty of other boats, and I was just like, man, this is, no, there's just reef there. I know if I go a mile past Necker and then go down.
You're good to go.
I was like, I don't want to be that guy who makes it, you know, around the world and then ends up on this stupid reef out here. Or this lovely reef, I should
say. Yeah, that's a beautiful reef.
It is. What's it looking like these days?
It's looking good.
Rough.
So we brought the snorkel tours back, which mm-hmm. is awesome. They're not, not that I know what they used to be like, but from what the guests who have been on them before, they're not the exact same. The snorkel boat we're using is one of the launch boats.
Yeah.
So we can't take as many people, but the snorkeling's pretty good. So out on Eustacia Reef, I have now seen spotted eagle rays.
Lovely.
Countless turtles. You know.
Oh, I saw tons of them today.
Yeah.
Just driving up from Tortola.
Lobsters, crab, barracuda, some huge groupers down there as well.
Really?
Yeah, just hiding out in those little crevices,
which is
awesome. And then, you know, all the normal reef fish, like blue tangs and parrotfish. But it's good. Yeah, it's nice.
That's good to hear. I kind of always wondered how that, because that reef, Eustacia Reef is like a barrier reef, and it takes a beating. There's a lot of those little spotted ones. There's Kinto's Reef, which is a teeny little one, and then there's a longer version of that where they have the cannons and stuff. But the barrier reef, at least for the upper part, was always pretty bleak.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought that those couple of years off after Irma, where they weren't getting people, there wasn't disturbance going on,
mm-hmm.
I would think that would have brought back quite a bit of life.
Yeah, no, the marine life is definitely there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Dude, there's so many like little secret awesome spots around where you can just find these really kind of healthy little chunks of reef that,
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't even think are there, but boom, like you can, I don't know, there's some amazing little spots, and I'm just starting to, like, being here is a lot of things are flooding back into my head. Running over that hill, I was kind of like, oh yeah, and looking at this, and I saw like Deep Bay over by Byers Creek, and
what were your first thoughts on coming back?
Like, well, coming back?
Yeah, coming back. What were your first
thoughts?
Oh, I
was just super stoked, man. I was very fortunate to be able to squeeze this in between speaking gigs that I just came from in the Bahamas and Cayman, and then the next set, which is in Florida in the beginning of April. And I just didn't really have anything else slotted, but I mean, to be able to just come here, and I know I got to do a lot of presentations and stuff, but it's so nice. Like,
mm-hmm.
I love being here. I'm, you know, I've always just felt like this is like the second home.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's totally different now and all that sort of stuff, there's a lot of things that are exactly the same. I mean, seeing a lot of the same faces still working here.
Yeah.
Bacchus at the bar, Ramon back there making, I can't wait. I pretty much have been on, not really a total like keto sort of diet or thing, trying to lose all that weight that I gained over the last year of injury. But I used to eat his pizzas literally.
Best pizza in the BVI.
All the time. Oh my God, it was so good.
Best pizza in the BVI.
So I'm for sure going to have at least one or two of those while I'm here.
Oh, I have at least one a week.
Yeah, they're bad. So good. And he just whips them out, man.
Oh my God.
I remember I was dating this girl from Puerto Rico, Christina, and I think she was here at Valentine's Day, and he made a pizza for her in the shape of a heart. He's just a big softy, that guy.
That's a good custom order.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. For sure. Well, it's so funny that you ended up coming here in the dark. That's how I arrived as well. I was on the late ferry from Tortola.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was pretty much chaos. I got thrown in, right? I got here at Thanksgiving during Hopi Family Fun Week, and we were, you know, 110% occupancy, and got thrown to my room. And just, you know, there's tons of staff up there, beers and all of a sudden. I'm just like, whoa, this is crazy. And the next day I was running a beer can regatta, like straight out of the gate. And it was like, holy smokes. And, you know, 15 or no, what did we have back there? 10 or 12 lasers and then 14 Hobie Cats and then all these other. And it was just like everything out there. But I was just. I don't know. I was just like, well, I said I can do all this stuff. I better just give it a shot.
No, I mean, that was same with me. I show up and I think the next day I was doing a beer can. Same thing.
It's the classic.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's super low pressure. And you can see now, I would assume, you know, going back to Walloon, how overly complicated that stupid race is.
Oh, my God.
And how easy it is to actually run it. It's ridiculous. I mean, I can remember being like, why are you guys making a big deal out of this? Because this is just a regatta. It's super simple.
Well, I mean, I think back to like even my college sailing days that in like competitive races, you would just have one tiny little whaler and that was the committee boat.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And no, nothing else. You know, that was it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I understand on Walloon it is kind of, it's like the main event sort of thing, and we like to sort of blow it up and everything like that, but yeah, it's funny. I really like the format down here because it's just super easy. You can do like 5-6 races.
Oh, yeah.
Tossing beers to people.
Yeah, very relaxed, you know.
Oh, my God, so much fun.
I make my protest rule. If there's a protest, you have to shotgun a beer. And then the winner wins the protest.
Oh, you know? Nice. Yeah, I like that one. Mine was that if you wanted to do a protest, an actual one, the hearing was at midnight on the top of Guy's Trail. And you had to bring a case of beer, I think, something like that. Nobody ever protests any of them, except outside of Pro-Am Regatta. I don't know if they'll ever bring that back, but that got a little competitive around these parts, as you can imagine. You get these America's Cup skippers and... Oh, man, that was pretty nuts. Well, man, it's just, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're representing. I mean, obviously, it's awesome that Nick is still here, another Michigander, you know, from, or at least, you know, from, because you're not from Michigan.
I'm from Michigan.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Why did I think you were from Colorado?
No, I was born in Washington and then moved to Michigan when I was like 9 months old.
So
I'm from Michigan. And
right. Completely. Well, I mean, if on my birth certificate, I'm a Wyoming native.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cowboy explains a lot. Country. Yeah. Explains a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
I can throw like I can hang a bear line in a tree real good.
That's false. That's
what do you mean that's false? I was really good at that. I believe you witnessed the skill set.
I witnessed one good throw.
Who knows? I can't wait to do that trip again. I'm stoked that that was honestly, when I heard you were possibly going to be up there, the first thing I thought was, oh, he's going to be able to go on the trip.
Yeah, that was a highlight of my last year, for sure.
Dude, and Jinx is super stoked too. I was like, Gonzo's going to be up here. I'll bet you he's going to be able to go. And
he really
enjoyed hanging out and fishing and doing everything.
Yeah,
he was like, Gonzo's awesome, dude.
No, Colin's great, man.
For life,
he's a nice guy. That is you know, going into a trip like that, where, you know, out in the bush with, I knew you, you know, very well. So
yeah.
I wasn't, you know, I was like, all right. And then with Colin, I was like, I don't know this guy at all. You know, like what's he gonna be like? And it's a little like not intimidating, but
you never know. Right,
yeah, you
right.
don't know. Like, what if I'm just like, this guy sucks?
Yeah. Well, I honestly though, there's a serious vetting. Like that goes through that, and everybody knows, everybody who's ever been up there, and there's probably 12 people total, different people that have gone up over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I think only once, and it wasn't in Sylvania, it was at a different sort of thing with the same crew. But essentially, you really had to pass the test because that's such a special place up there in the UP that if you ruin it somehow for everybody, like, that's awful. That's literally like, if I whatever was in a funk or something up there, and somebody was like, dude, you're kind of messing it up, I'd probably be like, you know what, I'm gonna leave. I'll see you guys later. Or I'm gonna go camp by myself. Something like that. You know, I don't know. I just, because it is, it's such a special place, and I've been trying to goat these other guys into coming back, mostly Draker. He's a photographer for Boeing, and
oh, nice.
He's been on the show. Shout out Drake. And he was always so much fun to have up there, but he's down in Charleston. So it's hard to, you know,
yeah.
It's hard to cut the time, and he has kids and everything. But yeah, if we're able to get a crew, we're going to try and get Charlie Rang. He doesn't know if he's going to be up. He came up a couple of years, and if you can get the magic number, I think is 6.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do that, you're only allowed, I believe, 3 tents per site.
Oh.
Yeah. And so
you have tent mates. Yeah.
Which, at first glance, you're sort of like, what? Like, I want my own tent. But, you know, Colin and I were always tent mates. And I don't know, there's something kind of comical and funny.
Yeah,
about
you know.
Grown men. I mean, we were kids back then. We were in our 20s, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, to do it now, I'd be like, oh, how's your back pain? Like, oh, yeah, my back hurts too. And da da da. But I'm looking forward to that. Dude, It's just, I can picture hopping in that canoe and first step in it, and then you just start paddling and you get away from those cabins.
Yeah.
And you just enter the woodland realm.
It's crazy how quickly that starts.
Yeah.
Like, it's just instant. For like there being cabins like right there at the launch, and then you're instantly just like in the deep woods.
Yeah,
it's
bald
awesome.
Eagles and freaking pike the size of a cannon.
That was one of the biggest pikes I've ever seen. That
was
caught.
Definitely the biggest pike I ever saw.
That was
for
awesome.
Sure. Caught with the smallest lure I've ever used, and the worst little fishing pole. Holy smokes! That was pretty intense.
That was awesome. I my favorite part of that was just next to you. I was like, yeah, Jerome, you need the net? You're like, nah, I'm good. And then the pike comes up and surfaces. You're like, oh, I'm going to need that net.
I'm going to need a bigger boat.
It was dragging you, dude.
It was. It was very powerful.
Yeah.
And I just let that, whatever the... What is it where you adjust it so it can run out?
The drag.
I just let that drag off because I wanted that fish. I'd never caught a fish that big. On the ocean you do, obviously,
yeah.
But like in a lake.
Especially, it's not that big of a lake if you really think about it, like comparatively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tiny. It's narrow in most spots. Yeah, it opens up and stuff. The nice part, that lake, Crooked Lake has... sort of, I think, the biggest fish in it just because it does wind all over the place. It has so many. It has more shoreline than any of the other ones up there. But
That was my favorite lake just for the... It feels like you're going through rivers kind of throughout those narrow spots.
Yeah, it's super cool, man.
Yeah.
Wow, and the old leaky beans coming out of...
Are you bringing
retirement.
It?
Yeah, I'm going to... We offload the whaler for the summer, so we have a trailer that's licensed.
Mm-hmm.
Just strap that sucker
on.
Roll up. I gotta put a fresh coat of paint on it.
So I take it we're not doing that many portages if you're bringing the leaky bean?
I think the only portage, if we are able to get, I believe the site is Wolf, and it's on, I can't remember what lake, but it's the only... lake that only has one spot, so you get a private lake, essentially. Yeah, but you got to do like 3-4 portages to get there.
And you do that in Leaky Bean?
Oh, I would for sure. Now that my back doesn't hurt, yeah, I'm getting strong again, bro. I don't know if you noticed, but like, I have put in the freaking work. I was by the end of 2023, I was in such a mess. It was not good what was going on, and I needed something to snap me out of it. And finally, I think I snapped myself out of it first and then just started putting in the work little by little and trying to be patient with it. And it was like the exercise, but then also just cold calling and trying to get something generating, something going. And then I got that call about those talks, and then everything just started to steamroll after that. It's amazing how... your attitude or your outlook and your positivity can take such a huge dive for whatever reason, you know, be it, for me, it was, I think the, essentially it was the physical pain I was in for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it just, I was just digging my own freaking hole for so long that whole year. And then finally, like, just decided to put the shovel down and slowly fill it back in. And now 2 months later or whatever, since that point, it just, like, I feel like my old self, dude.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I haven't felt like this in a long time. It's, that was brutal. I mean, I do this presentation about that trip and I've turned it into this adventure story kind of thing. But there is a reality of how much it, I think, affected my life and how that close call and that trauma and stuff just mm-hmm. messed me up and then physically damaged, you know, my back and everything. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I try not to think too much on it because I always still just want to tell the story like it's this crazy sea shanty, you know, sort of thing.
But I mean, yeah, there's always going to be that lasting kind of effect, you know, the trauma, as you said, and the physical.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, the game plan is essentially to try and get back out there and not the exact same route because I'll be leaving from further south mm-hmm. this time. But yeah, heading out across the Atlantic, down to the equator, around the South Atlantic, and then back up with a little plastics research thrown in. If it all works. Yeah. Matt Rutherford, shout out to the old single-handed podcast. He just finished up doing his second round of plastics data collection in the Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll be putting out a podcast pretty soon. I had him on the show virtually last week, and yeah, it's crazy, man. He's one of those guys. He's been dedicated to his non-for-profit ocean research project for years, and it's a struggle, and he just keeps plugging away. And I don't know. I've got so much respect for that. When it's never easy, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, yet you just keep going.
Yeah, you know, finds it important.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, and it is. It is important.
It affects every single aspect of life. It's not just, you know, a career or a job or trying to, like, financially make money, but it's the same with, you know, friendships and relationships and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's always going to be work. And as long as you're willing to stick it out and not just give up and be like, to hell with this.
Yeah.
I'm out. I am done. And sometimes, granted, you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you got to make the right decision. But yeah, I mean, when it's something like a non-for-profit like that, where he's doing really good stuff and bringing in good information, to see him year after year kind of keep plugging away is, I don't know, it's pretty cool. Bit of a tangent there.
Yeah, man.
Off into the weeds I go. Oh, man. So, essentially, you've been down here since October?
Since November, I want to say the 7th. November 7th.
I thought you'd be tanner.
Sunscreen, man.
Yeah.
Actually, I got a dermatology appointment on a Tuesday to get the spot removed.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
Showed up after I moved down here.
Oh, really?
I went for a consultation a month ago. The dermatologist in Tortola. Yeah, Tortola.
Yeah.
And the dermatologist was not happy about it. She was very concerned.
Anything that pops up new, my derm is always like, if it's new, point it out to me.
Especially my history, too. I've had two moles removed that were cancerous.
Oh, really?
So
sickle cell or melanoma?
I have no idea.
I
was young when it happened.
Off.
Ooh.
Surface one, so not. But they had to scoop. I saw the scoop they took out in the jar afterwards. It looked like a slug. It was huge.
Uh-huh.
And I had it done the day before I came back to Bitter End after the break, and I had a Frankenstein, like, 3-inch gouge with the big black stitches and all that. Well, hopefully they get to the story. This is really good. I'm hoping to actually get my dermatologist on the show when I get back.
Oh,
just to, you know, talk about why the sun hates us and is trying to kill us, yet feeds us vitamin D.
Exactly. It's a balance. Everything in moderation.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Everything in moderation.
I'm looking forward to getting a little color. It's been
You're pretty white.
Yeah. Well, I've been in Michigan, and It's been a very mild winter. I must admit, there was a day in February where it hit 67 degrees, and I literally went out on the lawn and laid out. I couldn't believe
what?
It. What? Yeah, I almost pulled the motorcycle out of the garage just to
ride around.
Yeah. But I changed the oil, But yeah, it was crazy. We only got one good dumping up there where it snowed like 2 feet. And that lasted for a good while in like January, and then it melted. Boom, gone. And then we had a little bit here, a little bit there. And by the time I left, it was all gone again.
Was the lake frozen when you left?
Walloon?
Yeah.
No. it opened up in February. Probably not. I think it opened up in early March. It's going to be a warm summer.
A tub. Up there.
I think so, yeah. I mean, even the water down here is definitely warm, but...
Do you think this is warm down here?
For this time of year, yeah. It's usually really cold.
I find it freezing right now.
Well, you're used to, yeah. I mean, well, and I could be off without a temperature gauge, but I don't know. My thoughts are a little skewed because one of the fellow speakers on this last panel is a climatologist, and... his big thing was about sea level rise and how much warmer, you know, basically he was like, yeah, 2022 was the warmest year on record. And then until 2023, which was now the warmest year. And he's like, with El Nino in full swing in 2024, this is almost guaranteed to be the warmest year on record by far again.
Great.
And that means the oceans are warm, all that sort of stuff. And I know there's debate on that, blah, blah, blah. But this dude was like super smart.
I mean, even when I came down here back in November, like the water was hot. Like it was like almost uncomfortable to go in when it was like a hot day.
Well, yeah, typically it still is. Yeah, I mean, the hottest it's going to be is in September. And then October, it's still pretty warm. But usually those November, like you get a lot of squalls, you get a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. You get more northerly sort of wind patterns that form. And typically by like December, January, it's freezing the water. Like you don't even want to get in it.
Yeah, some of my local friends were like, I'm not getting in that water, man. Yeah, no way.
So I don't know. I mean, it feels great to me. That was the first thing. Hop in the water, then go run the hill, and now do a podcast with my buddy, Dr. Gonzo. It's freaking awesome, man. Oh, should I pause it and go check my laundry?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to pause right here. Bam. Yeah, a little side note on the coffee. Yeah, I mean that, well, so my concern, and I don't know why this has happened. Maybe it's just because of the exercise and stuff, but I get up excessively early now. Maybe it's old age too. Literally, I'm usually up around 4:30 in the morning.
Just ready to go.
And I just get up and I'm like, where's my coffee? Let get my computer. I'm going to start doing this and that. Because I got all these sort of things that need to be done or I'm chipping away at and stuff. And so when I was on, I always do, going back to the camping, you know, obviously I got my French press and I like to make my McDonald's breakfast blend, or like you liked the Colombian roast.
I do like the Colombian roast. That was a good one.
That one's a little richer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I thoroughly got joy out of making a cup of coffee for you. And like putting it under the vestibule.
Oh my God. That was the best part of the morning. That was the best part of the morning.
That reinforces in my head the whole idea of it's better to give than it is to receive. Like you really, I got so much. I'd like walk up smiling like, yeah.
He's going to love this.
Yeah, I know, right? There's something nice about doing good things for friends. But so when I went on that West sale, where we go around the Bahamas, right? Around Abaco. And we don't have, you know, it's just Folgers instant coffee. And I was kind of bummed a little. I was like, oh, good. This stuff's going to be gross. It's awesome, man. It tasted great. And it was so easy to make.
So just easy.
Just a little hot water and then bang with a little creamer in it. And when I went back to Michigan, instead of getting the French press stuff, I bought a thing of Folgers. But I thought it was the instant, but it wasn't. It was the grounds.
It was the grounds. Yeah. Which, I mean, the Folgers grounds are not great.
No.
No. They
I
are not
great. I found that one out immediately.
Yeah, they are not great.
Sorry, Folgers. You're not getting our vote on that one. Your instant is better. And that's Nescaf up
there.
That's
the Nescaf.
Right?
Nescaf is my favorite instant coffee, I think. Yeah. I've yet to try the Folgers instant.
Okay, okay. Yeah, Folgers. I mean, yeah.
It's the best part of waking up.
Uh-huh. Folgers in your cup.
Yeah, so I've got to figure that out for tomorrow morning because I'm going to be up pretty darn early again, I'm sure. You guys do the trail hikes at 9 now, huh?
At 9 in the morning.
Slacking.
What time did you guys used to do them?
6:30.
What?
Yeah, bro. As soon as they were sunrise hikes, and I, granted, I think I did probably 90% of them, but I was going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So I was happy to take people over the hill, and nobody else really wanted to do those.
I mean, it's hot at 9. Like, the sun's up.
Dude, it was hot at, like, what time did I go? 5:30?
Yeah.
Dude, I was sweating bullets.
I mean, that's on, though, like, when I'm hungover and I get a trail, that's my favorite thing. Because I know I'm just going to sweat it all out, you know?
Goodbye.
Yep, yep.
There was one trail hike we did years ago where we got down to Byrus, and within 30 feet of the end of the trail and getting to the road, one of those giant cactuses with 80 million arms, had completely blocked the whole path.
Oh.
And it was all cactuses around it, too.
So you can't get around that.
I can't even remember exactly what we did. I almost feel like we had to turn back and go back.
You'd have
down.
To, right?
I think we went back up part of the trail and then back down the other side, because there used to be a lot of forks up there. You could take like 5 different trails.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the old trail that takes you up to Lover's Leap on the other mountain over there. I think we had to do that, but it was sort of a sticky situation because we were kind of like, well, I had some older hikers with me, and you know, you get over that hill and you're pretty whipped.
Yeah.
And these two were definitely whipped, and I think I pushed through and made a little arena or area to get through around the side, because I think I looked at them and realized that they weren't going to be able to go back up that hill again.
Yeah.
And that sucked. That was, I think after that, we thought about taking machetes with us, but we decided not to. Just because if you
not a great look.
Yeah. I mean, we used to take them up there all the time for chopping the trail and stuff, but that wasn't with guests.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
I will say, back to the cactus, that was the biggest thing that shocked me, actually, about moving here.
Oh, yeah?
So I knew nothing about...
Very dry.
...about the BVI, other than I had friends that worked here and loved it. And when I got here, I was like, there's cactus everywhere.
Yeah.
I was like, what? We're in the desert. How is it? What is this?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, that air is essentially coming from the Sahara.
Yeah.
And it hits us. And we like to think that we create the clouds for, you know, St. Thomas and Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico really creates some serious clouds because it has high mountains, actual mountains. But, yeah, I mean, the air is just, you know, it's leveled out. It's the trade winds. But by the time it hits us, we disrupt it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm pretty sure St. Thomas and St. John and stuff get way more rain than
we do. Oh, yeah. Well, they farm on St. Thomas and St. John. They have, like, agriculture.
I think so, yeah. We've got a little, but not much. We're really, terrain-wise, it's rough, man. It's really rough. They tried to, for years, do a big agriculture project in South Sound.
Really?
And then they ended up, I think, just basically they got a bunch of rock and dirt and stuff and leveled out this huge area, because South Sound is a big flat.
Mm-hmm.
But... and then, I don't know, they just decided to stop doing it. Huh. And supposedly there's treasure buried right under where they did it. Never to be found again, people.
Yikes.
Haunted anyway. You don't want to deal with that. Don't want to mess with any of that stuff. The jumbies will get ya. I mean, it's been going good though, huh? You're just feeling it with the team and stuff. How many?
Yeah.
So, yeah, can you break down the team? Like, not who it is, but how many positions and people... Are doing what and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's 3 instructors, me, 2 girls from England, both that studied at the Water Sports College Rockley, actually. So
Rockley.
They're phenomenal instructors.
Yeah,
they are leaps and bounds better than me when it comes to teaching, you know?
You get to learn a lot of stuff from them.
I do get to learn a lot of stuff from them. So it's us, and then we have a local guy that's kind of like, you know, they call it the attendant, but, you know, he does everything. You know, he's working hand-in-hand with us. He's trying to work his way up to become an instructor, which is awesome.
Nice.
You know? But we pretty much all share the workload. So anything that needs to get done, you know, we kind of do it. So we're all doing beer cans. We're all doing lessons. We're all doing, like today, I raked the beach.
Yeah.
You know, the girls went out, cleaned a bunch of boats. You know, just kind of like whatever needs to get done. Like, we'll kind of pitch in to do it, which is nice. You know, it's good. Kind of, it's like a... We're all throwing a fire on the log when you need to. It's not like one person's doing one task and that's it.
Yeah, that gets a little monotonous.
Yeah, exactly, which is really nice, you know. It's like my days, I wake up and it's just like, all right, what am I going to do today?
Right. And then you have Captain Kinto.
And we have Captain Kinto.
But he was all, you know, I mean, even when I was in charge of Captain Kinto, I never felt like I was really in charge of Captain Kinto. he kind of does what he wants. He's the man.
It's his snorkel trips. It's not ours. It is his snorkel trips.
He's in tomorrow, right?
He is in tomorrow.
I cannot wait to see him.
Yeah, he's in tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. Yeah, Kinto and I, we got along really well because he definitely had his head in the game when it came to customer service more so than most people. And he has that charisma and the charm and the energy to just juice like really hard.
I mean, most of the signups we get for that snorkel tour are people who have come here before and just see his name and go, I got to go on
that. Like, oh, Kinto.
Yeah. I'm going on that. You know?
We used to, when we had Corinthian, which, you know, we could put 80, 90 people on, get everybody loaded up. And I'd be like, Kinto, I knew Kinto was going to go talk to his mom who worked in the kitchen or in the dining room. And he was going to go get like a coffee or whatever. And he was always going to show up just a couple minutes late. And it used to just, I'd be like, Kinto. Let's do this. And he and I battled back and forth. And then I just realized I need to modify my approach here. And so what I started doing, and I told Kinto I was going to do this. I was like, all right, Brown Bear, I need you to, because we had our lovely nicknames. Yeah. He's Brown Bear, I'm Vanilla Bean. And I'd be like, all right, man, I'm going to get the guests to chant Kinto. And so don't, like, if you're walking up, if you don't hear that yet, don't come up here. And man, oh, man, it was great. And we always do it. It always did it on Monday for sure, because that was when the managers were all having their meeting, and that was well within earshot. And when they hear this, like, cacophony of guests all, like, getting riled up, it was always so cool, man. God, he was just always game for it. Anything to like juice it up to that next level.
He loves it.
Yeah.
He definitely feeds on the juice.
Definitely feeds
on the juice.
Nope, he gets it. He definitely does. He is one of a kind. They broke the mold. I always referred to him as the snorkel king of Virgin Gorda until I realized that he preferred of the entire Caribbean. And that's saying something. I mean, he's got some stiff competition. I've seen some of the snorkel guides down in Rodney Bay on St. Lucia.
Are they good?
Full juice, dude. Wow. I mean, dancing, doing all this stuff. And Kinto is known to cut a rug. When he had Ponce, when that was his baby, and that was his for 10 years or something before we bumped him up to Corinthian, man, he just ruled that thing. He packed 40 people on there and just rum punch was flowing. Oh, God. Just such good times. I mean, that's kind of the neat part about this place. It's just the vibe. It's about just everybody wants to have as much fun as possible. You kind of can do whatever it takes to make sure everybody's having fun. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of rules and regulations like up in the States. And I don't know. It allows you to get sort of closer to that cliff edge, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I have seen quite a few people fall over that, and they don't last. They don't last. It's pretty incredible in this place. You have to kind of watch out for yourself because it can be pretty easy to lose control, especially when it comes to, like, alcohol and stuff like that. And I still remember one guy who it got on top of him. He just couldn't handle it, and he'd go out and be like, I'm just gonna have a couple of beers, and then the next thing you know, he's like, falling face down on the pavement, and comes in and he's all scratched up, and yeah, I remember him finally coming to me and being like, I gotta go, I can't do it here, it's too much freedom. I was like, wow, holy smokes, I gotcha. And it was mad respect for him to do that.
You had to realize that before.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Gotta be careful with it. I'd hate to see Dr. Gonzo like that, but I don't think you will.
No.
You got a good head on your shoulders.
Yeah, got a good head. I mean, a little bit older now,
I think 26?
28.
Oh, you're 28?
28, yeah.
Dude, you're almost 30, bro.
Almost 30, hitting 3-0. And, I think... a certain place in Northern Michigan kind of taught me pretty well on how to handle the work and then the party after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not gonna say names there. But.
No. You can always just say Walloon Lake, man.
Yeah. That definitely taught me how to.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it is. It's an interesting balance because obviously when you're younger, when you're in your 20s, you can handle later nights and crazier nights, and then being able to go right back into work and bang, you can turn it right on. Obviously that changes as you get older, but there is a nice, I always found that there was a certain energy boost and enthusiasm boost when you had a really fun night and then you see everybody the next morning. It's like, wow, that was crazy. All right, let's do today and just kill it. And then maybe do it again tonight, that sort of thing. It sort of snowballs a little. And obviously, like I say, you can't do that your whole life.
Yeah.
But if you can get away with it for those times.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always so crucial, especially back then, that you killed it during the day. And that gave you... It was like... the way I think of it is a cycle of two things feeding off each other. You kill it at work. And so when you finish work, you feel great, and it's like, let's crack some brews. And then you have a crazy fun night, and then you wake up, and you're just like, that was a crazy night. Let's have an epic day of work. And then you do this epic day of work, and you're like, wow, that was a great day of work. Let's crack some brews. And, man, I obviously you got to take a few days off here to get it, but.
Yeah.
So fun.
I mean, that was the Christmas time,
Yeah.
Christmas Eve's big here.
Did you go up to the Bon?
Of course I did.
Yeah,
we all did. Actually,
that's nuts.
Not to put Nick, on the spot here. That was the one day I was late for work. I made sure all my coworkers were awake on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
I went out. I was like, yo, wake up. We got work today, like 30 minutes early. Come back here. Fall asleep on my couch after waking up everybody else.
Really?
Everybody else shows up to work on time. Nick's, I wake up to Nick knocking on my door in my uniform. I'm ready to go,
Yeah.
He's just like, come on, man. What are you doing?
He's like, whoa. I don't know what happened.
It's like, I woke everybody up. Sorry.
God. That was always a pretty tough week to get through. But then you always, no matter how busy it was at Christmas, after you got through New Year's, and by about the 3rd of January, it went dead quiet.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got my
rest
then. Yeah. Holy smokes. So I would go up and bartend up at Gunny's.
Really?
Yeah. We'd open this little sidebar, and I would run that for him
until
maybe like 2 in the morning. And then I'd come back to Bitter End, and then boom, next day, fire right into it. But there were multiple Christmases where... We woke up and it was just complete rain out. Nobody renting anything, nobody going out, and I was so exhausted, but I had to, hold fast down there. I couldn't do that in my age now, I don't think. Not in that same fashion, for sure. And I'm glad I did it back then,
mm-hmm.
because it was a great experience, but yeah, time catches up with everybody.
Dude, I mean, the rainy days here, it's weird. Forgetting how much sun we get down here on those days when it's cloudy and overcast, they're just sad.
Yeah.
Sad days down here, Like, the energy is just low from everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's hard. I mean, everybody wants to have fun. But then it's just, it's so rare that the conditions aren't good, because that's one of the beauties of this place is that the conditions are almost always awesome for this.
Yeah.
You know, it's perfect. This is one of the greatest water sports and sailing meccas. You just can't get a better spot than inside of North Sound for small boats,
oh
even big
God.
Boats. I used to love ripping around in Mighty Sparrow because it's like it's on rails compared to being out at sea in the swell and everything.
Shit's flat compared to that.
So fun. Oh, doing those sunset sails. And we used to have an Express 37, pretty much a race boat that we'd do day charters on. But with the staff, we'd hop on that sucker in the evening and go rip through the mooring field. Big old tiller on it, and oh, we made a lot of people really nervous. That was fun. That was really fun. And hopefully, you know, I don't know, it'll be interesting to talk to ownership and stuff as far as their game plan with boats and everything, but I would see eventually a return of some keel boats and stuff like that.
I would love some. That's the one thing I miss about Northern Michigan is just keel boats.
I know. I keep saying Ensign, get an Ensign, get a bunch
It'd
of Ensigns.
So good down here.
So good. They'd
you
be,
could pile them in.
They'd be a little wet, granted.
Oh, yeah.
But still, that
be
who cares?
Fun.
Yeah, it's
It'd
nice,
be fun,
nice
man.
Warm water, man. Should I go check my laundry again? I didn't
yeah,
have
do you
very
need
much.
To? Oh, you didn't?
Yeah, let me pause. Ding. All right, Dr. Gons. So, I guess to wrap things up, How do you see the future of you and the old BEYC?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That remains to be,
solidified.
Yeah, solidified. Yeah, solidified. We'll see. I'm kind of in this this limbo period right now.
Yeah.
With BEYC, to be honest, I would like a position with like a little bit more, you know, 28 compared to you. You know, I'm getting old. You know, whether we like it or not, you know,
I
work with a bunch of people in their early 20s and, you know, I see it. I'm definitely not as fast as them when it comes to the manual labor side of the job.
Oh, what?
And, you know, I would like to utilize my brain a little bit more. I think for BEYC.
Yeah,
I think
that
that's definitely something I can add to the company.
Mm-hmm.
And
you do have a big brain.
I have been told that.
Yeah. Well, I mean. Your level of intellect and your data skills and your computer skills and all that sort of stuff are so far beyond normal.
Yeah, have been told that in the past, but thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's a good thing.
I mean, you gotta own it when you're a nerd.
Yeah.
You
well,
know?
And utilize it too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and for past jobs, companies have realized that I've worked for in the past,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of utilize that more and. I kind of hope that Bitter End will see this and use me kind of more for where my strengths are.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Well, yeah. It's nice, like you said, you know, everything kind of in moderation, a nice balance. You know, when I was here, I took it over so quickly and I didn't want to because mm-hmm. I didn't want that. I wanted to just do the sailing instruction because I took over at Michigania very quickly as well. And that responsibility, I always wanted to get away from it, but I also, I think I realized that I really enjoy that and I'm pretty decent with it. And, but it was one of those things where, I don't know, it is like at your age and everything, once you're in your like past your early 20s, you want to, almost in any job that you're doing, start to get to at least more of a management or have something on your side that's special so that you're not just doing what all the 20-year-olds are doing.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but it also gives you the back and forth of being able to still get on the beach, still do
exactly.
the fun stuff while you get to do the other stuff as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love it. You know, every day I'm still...
It's a heck of an office, isn't it?
It's a great office. It's a great office, man. I mean, even this morning, just like looking out, I was tired this morning, you know, and didn't sleep well last night, but it was just like still showing up to work, like, damn.
Just like, here we go again.
This is where I work? What?
Well, and it'll be interesting to see how that beach feels when they get... is it going to be rooms right next to it?
Yeah, so there's going to be five, I think it's two-bedroom rooms.
Okay.
Next to it, so
right from water sports up.
Yeah, which should be awesome.
That'll be pretty
getting,
cool. Yeah.
Getting guests getting right village. In the morning as they're coming to get their coffee, you know, like, hey, you want to go on a sup yoga?
Yeah, you know? Right.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of pictures on their social media of the yoga and stuff. Yeah. I'm glad that's still going on.
Oh, yeah, sure. Man. A great way to start the day.
Dude, good old Dobbs. He was instrumental in developing that program because he just dove right into it and he just went on YouTube and started acquiring knowledge. But then he put his own little thing. His call sign was Chaturanga. And so it was Chaturanga, Zookeeper. I can't even remember all the rest of them. Listening to Channel 16 and 17 in the North Sound during the years that I was here must have just been comical. It was like, Zookeeper, oh. Zookeeper, this is Chaturanga, Chaturanga. Yeah, Chaturanga, Zookeeper, go 1-7. Constantly, all day long. Pork chop, oh my God. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing to come to a place like this and do this sort of job. The other thing, very much like what we did up in Michigan, is there's a lot of connections to be made by these guests that you get to interact with in such a special way.
Absolutely.
And you never know how, I mean, the most oddball story I ever have is just that I was hitchhiking in Vermont while I was on the Appalachian Trail, and I got picked up by someone who I had rescued his wife on a windsurfer 4 or 5 years before that,
mm-hmm.
at Bitter End. And I was like, oh my God, this is such a weird world. Let alone somebody who might have just the right job for you down the line.
Exactly.
Sort of thing. So I don't know. It's pretty crazy, man. Well, I wish you nothing but luck.
Thank you, Jerome.
I can't wait to see. I mean, I saw you a little bit in action, but it'll be fun to sort of clown around because I'm doing my talks from like 10 till 11 and then not until 5 till 6 or whatever. So I've got oodles of time during the day to sort of hang and do stuff. I've got a lot of work to do, but I plan on spending quite a bit of time at water sports.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having you at water sports, man.
Dude, I want to paddleboard. I want to learn how to wing.
Yeah, we'll get you out there.
Yeah, I it'll be fun. I'll probably have to eat my words when I fall, but I have a feeling I'll be pretty good at it.
I will say, out of every single person who's been like, I'm a professional snowboarder.
Yeah.
I surf. I do all of this. And they can't get it.
And they can't
on the first
get it
try.
At all.
You know, they'll right. get it. They'll get it, but they'll not on the first try.
Yeah.
It's like a, to me, it's like a feeling of like, I told you to sign up for the lesson.
Yeah.
And you didn't.
Yeah.
You know, right, like, right. all right. Yeah.
Well, oh, I'm not gonna, and you know, I got my tiny little lesson from Megan, right?
Yeah.
But I want to see a full lesson from either Megan or who's the other one?
Gemma.
Yeah. So I'll get a quality lesson. And yeah, how long does the lesson take on those?
About an hour.
The beach part?
Oh, the beach part's like five, 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So kind of just like windsurfing.
Yeah. You know? I will say, this is my one piece of advice on the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Just listen to your instructor. Don't think think you know more than them. Just listen to the instructor.
I would never. That's one thing. Even as an instructor, when I'm taking out students like on a keelboat and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I'm still listening to them because I've learned quite a bit from them. I think I always used to tell new staff, I was like, the minute you think you know like everything about sailing and nobody can teach you anything, this minute you know you're actually dead wrong.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No one ever learns everything there is to know about sailing.
It's absolutely.
Just, it's always, always new knowledge, new tricks, everything. So take that with a slice of pie. Is that how it goes? I don't even know. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on and stuff. And yeah, dude, maybe we'll do another one of these about just about camping.
Oh, I would like that. That'd be good.
I like the camping. I could literally, we could have easily just gone off into the weeds and stayed there.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love talking about getting in those woods, man.
Oh, dude,
so nice.
I mean, you published a little bit of that, of the recording, I think, of that trip.
No.
Oh, you didn't put that on?
That went out to, maybe there was some little chunk or something. But no, there was a side one that I put onto YouTube that was just like a private unlisted one.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Of
Look
course,
forward
man.
To the week. And yeah, it's just really great to be down here again and have you here as well.
Yeah.
So super awesome, man.
Good to see you, brother.
Yeah.
Good to see you.